You're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, a non-commercial, listener-supported radio station founded by the Daily Memphian, Crosstown Concourse, and University of Memphis.
Oh, yeah, it's WYXR. WYXR 91.7 FM, Memphis, WYXR.org on the web. This is Robbie Grant. Here on Talkin' Memphis today, we've got a special edition from a talk we did at the MOSH, the Museum of Science and History, with their guitar exhibit that they've had up. Really incredible exhibit with a lot of great local stuff in there as well. I hosted a panel a couple months ago featuring Madam Frankie, Steve Selvage, and Alicia Trout. And tune in for that. It's coming up right this second. Thanks again for a great Real Talk with Chip Washington. Always appreciate him being here. And let's get to it. Here's the way we play MOSH panel.
Thanks for having us, Portia. Thanks to MOSH for hosting this panel. I'm Robbie Grant. I'm executive director of WYXR. I'm also a guitar player as well. I play guitar since I was, seventh grade, however old that is, and continue to play to this day. Next to me, I've got Alicia Trout. She is a singer, songwriter, guitarist for Alicia Pop, Sweet Knives, River City Tan Lines, Mouse Rocket, and other Memphis area bands. And then next to her, we have Madam Frankie. She's a guitar player, producer. I like her. Your bio is cool. She says she's obsessed with overdrive, envelope filters, and good vibrato, and currently going through a musical renaissance and reshaping her relationship to music. She plays live with Taliba Sophia and featured on Lawrence Matthews' new record and others. And she's also marketing director at Tone. And then next to her is Steve Selvage, who did not send me his bio, but I know his bio. We played music together for a long time. He was in Big Ass Truck for a long time around town with me, and also in the Hold Steady, which is a touring outfit now around, and played guitar for years. But it's cool. I guess I'll start with you, Frankie, since we've just met more recently. How does it feel to be featured in the museum? I saw, all three of them are featured, so that's really cool. How does that feel?
I'd say potentially surreal. I think when you look at the overarching of what's actually happening, I'm in a museum. So I think it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
My mom has made me it's crazy. So it's, in short, it's crazy.
Yeah. Let's give them a round of applause for that. That's cool. And so, Frankie, I want to hear, what's your guitar origin story? Everyone's got one. Where did you start playing guitar, and what got you interested in it?
So music has always been a part of my life, but my guitar origin story is very much the stars aligned kind of thing, but it's literally a JCPenney's catalog at my grandma's house. I was flipping through it, just looking at any and everything, landed on the guitar page and just got obsessed. I don't know what it was. I was like, oh my God. It was a black and white telly-shaped guitar in particular that was I don't know what this is, but I need one. And I was obsessed. So obsessed that by the time I got my first guitar, which I ended up getting an acoustic guitar, I couldn't play it well, but I could already play a song. I made a guitar out of a Sierra bar. It was kind of psychotic, but
What was that first song? Was it something, a cover song? You got to tell. Everyone's embarrassing, whatever the first.
Oh my gosh, what's his name? What's that guy's name? I think his name is Whitey, and he's got a song named What It's Like.
Alicia, what was your first song you learned on guitar?
I don't know if it's the first, definitely not the first song I learned, but remember somebody a little later after I kind of was figuring something out, but I still had no idea how really to play guitar. I happed upon like a Guitar World magazine that had Stairway to Heaven in it.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know if you guys can remember, any guitar players can remember, like, not understanding the instrument, but still learning to play every single note. I didn't understand how to read tabs. It had tabs. So I played every little note by every finger. And then, like, a couple years later, I learned that, oh, actually, you just hold your hand there in chords and pick those. You know what I mean? Yeah, and it was like, oh, they're actually just chords. You didn't have to, I had it all wrong, but.
So you're playing like staccato Stairway to Heaven.
I mean, it was, somehow I worked on it so hard that I pulled it off and people were impressed.
Yeah, well, before I asked Steve, mine was John Cougar Mellencamp's Pink Houses, which, you know, I was like, I could, you know, open E and then you do the little slide up. And I was just, I thought that was the coolest thing ever, so. Steve, what was your first one?
Well, there was a lot that led up to it, but what I wanted to learn was the song Ziggy Stardust, mm-hmm. you know, G, D sus, D sus, D sus. So I asked my dad, who's a guitar player, singer, songwriter, folk musician, Sid Selvage. I asked him to teach me that. He's like, you know what? I'll teach you E, A, and D, because those are the first position, you know, and when you go back and forth between those, come talk to me.
Yeah.
So I learned those chords. And I could go back and forth between them. But what happened was Eddie and the Cruisers had just hit cable. So I ended up knowing how to play on the dark side. Now, it's not where I mean, you know, much respect to the Beaver Brown Band, but it was a far cry from Ziggy Stardust. But that's
Eddie and the Cruisers, a movie from the 80s about a bar band, basically a bar band, kind of Bruce Springsteen
right.
thing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of music.
It bubbles up, yeah.
Yeah, and it was on HBO and Cinemax over and over again. And so your origin, I mean, your dad, Sid Selvage, played music. What's your origin story? Is that?
I mean, it was there from birth, probably. I mean, you know, all his musician friends, Jim Dickinson, Lee Baker. I mean, Lee Baker was like the archetypal guitar player. Before I had any kind of big rock and roll heroes, it was Lee, you know, and my dad.
Frankie, who have been your greatest influences in shaping your guitar style and sound? Someone famous or even someone local, or like who shaped your sound?
The sound, I've been actually spending time with this because I realized that a lot of the music that I was listening to wasn't so much like guitar based. It was more of like a feel. So like Erykah Badu and D'Angelo, like there's guitar in it, but it's more about how does the music feel. I started with like listening to John Mayer, like actually listening to how he played guitar and like Dave Matthews and how they played, like how he played the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of transitioned over to just like, how does this music feel? Then I would try to kind of replicate that feeling from those artists that I was listening to that wasn't necessarily guitar player.
Yes. And is there anyone locally that you see out playing? You're like, oh, they're bad.
I really like T.O. Stringer.
Yeah, they're.
Yeah, yeah, he's incredible. Alicia, what about you? Who's been your guitar influence?
I don't even, like, for me, guitar, I'm more of an influence by songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guitar is more like something I'm using in a collage of writing songs and stuff. So for me, I was really influenced when I was in high school, when I first heard like people I knew that were in my high school making their own music, and it was like this brand new concept to me that music, of course I'd seen live bands very not often, but they were recording their own music. And so and you happen to know him, but a guy I went to school with, his older brother named Tim Filippa, had a tape of all his four-track recordings, and that was what really got me playing music.
Steve?
Well, here again, just my dad and all his musician friends. Furry Lewis, blues man from Memphis, just sort of loomed large in our family, and there was a big part of that. But then, you know, just growing up with the sort of the classic rock pantheon. I got really, really, really into Zeppelin early on, and Jimmy Page was kind of my guy for a long time. But then, you know, the 90s was a good time, you know, being a teenager and hearing like Dave Navarro, hearing before I heard him speak, But like hearing that, being 16 and hearing Nothing Shocking for the first time was like so thankful. I mean, as a guitar player, you know, it was like, yeah. But then like, you know, getting into sample culture and digging through what these songs were made out of in terms of hip hop and stuff, finding like, you know, through Herbie Hancock, finding like Wah Wah Watson or, you know, Eddie Hazel from, I mean, Eddie Hazel and Bernie Worrell are probably two of the, I mean, if you were to listen to my playing, if you were to pick anything out, I think those would be two of the strongest influences. But, you know, it's just sort of the guitar world, you know, it's our community. So it's whoever's going to come through from that, you know, and then all the people, you know, that I grew up with, that we grew up with in town, you know.
Yeah. I saw him today, Jim Duckworth. Oh, incredible guitar player. He does 2030s jazz on WYXR, but he didn't really play guitar out like he used to, but he was one of these guys I'd see almost every week. And I'm like, that guy lives in our city. Like, he's such a big guitar player.
So crazy. Yeah. So just like almost demonically possessed. He's so good.
Frankie, how is your, well, I'll tell how I first heard your guitar. I mean, before I even met you, I heard your guitar playing. Like, we were, because YXR is in the central atrium at Crosstown. And so it's like, who is that? I mean, like, because, you know, it's normally a band or whatever. I think this was maybe right at the beginning of the pandemic, and you were just playing solo out, and it was just really beautiful. So that was a cool story, just like hearing that for the first time. But that was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, how has your guitar playing evolved over time?
As I was mentioning, I do think I'm literally in like some kind of like musical renaissance or whatever. Well, I will say, so initially it started off as like I started on acoustic, and it was kind of very like folky R&B type situation going on. And then when I switched in electric guitar, because I started doing the Music Mondays, it kind of switched over to really getting my hand at like playing lead, going back to trying to intertwine the two of like, here's some rhythm playing and then here's some lead. Like, I think the style of playing, there's a name for that, but it get it all around.
Yeah. Steve, you're a little older than Frankie. What about you? Like, how is your guitar playing evolved?
Oh, I don't know. It's, you know, more into songwriting. I mean, after a while, it's, you know, especially as you get on down the road, I mean, like, you want to be learning new things. You always have to keep new things, but you also have it. You sort of establish your kind of thing, you know? So I just sort of use that in the context, just kind of it. A lot of times what will kind of move the needle forward for me is having, you know, being on a gig and having to learn a song that I wouldn't normally play. And that kind of pushing me that way. And then, if I feel myself in a rut, I'll just go back to like the Memphis Masters. I mean, here again, it like influences. T.D. Hodges is like a treasure trove. There's so much stuff there, you know. So I just try just to get a little closer to T.D. I don't know, you know. I mean, we talk about it a lot. Is us guitar players just like what you're doing, where you're going, and you know, it's either a radical shift, like completely changing something up, or it's more of a fine-tuned sort of nuanced kind of thing of like, okay, well, how could I just let me work on just injecting more space? Let me take my hand off the fretboard. You know, like when I was 16, it was just a flood of notes all the time. You know, so hopefully I've learned a little something.
Alicia, what about you?
So, can you restate the question that went all over?
And you've been playing guitar for, you know, any number of years. So how has it evolved over time?
It's kind of de-evolved over time.
That's fine too.
Where I used to, you know, work at guitar, and then, I felt like it took me, I'm kind of a person who does a million artistic different things, and it took me a while till I played in a 3-person band where I was, of course, the only guitar player, and then I felt like I upped my skills, and then went back to bands with more players and switching off to guitar and keyboards and bands, so it went to like, oh, I got this trick, and that trick, and that trick. And I think those 3 tricks with really solid rhythm playing is about all I need. And I can stop trying to learn guitar now.
So now you're devolved.
Yeah, so, but the main thing that I really wanted to get for what appeals and works for me is to be really a tight live rhythm player where the songs are going. I want those very, very tight and structured, which maybe comes a bit from having an influence by like the Ramones and their rather military playing stuff, even though it's, yeah, that's
cool. Cool. Frankie, what's your setup like? I mean, you've got pedals. I think everyone here uses pedals to some sort, but how do you make use of pedals, and what's your favorite one? What's your favorite pedal, guitar pedal?
So my setup right now consists of always having the looper, which again, I'm trying to figure out what that looks like. So stay tuned. But right now it's a looper. I always have some type of delay or echo. And my amp has to have reverb. Reverb always, just always. And then I do have overdrive pedal, which took me a long time to figure out what pedal I was looking for, because there's like distortion and all that. I didn't know what I was looking for. Figured it out, it was overdrive. And then I have a envelope filter and a bass octaver. And my, I think it's probably going to be the wah pedal, even though it's the wah pedal.
What kind of looper are you using?
I will not be using it any longer. Okay. It is a Donner looper. I was using the Boss Ditto times two. Mm-hmm. And wow, she took me all the way through. And then she just, you know, she did all she could. And so I had to get another replacement, and the replacement is not doing what they need to do. So we'll be investing again. Yeah.
And then there's Steve. I know you've got a lot of pedals. You've got a lot of pedals. Steve's been my, he's my pedal advisor. So he's helped me buy a lot of pedals in the past too.
And build pedal boards.
Yes. And build pedal boards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you forget something, Frank?
That's it. Not the Boss.
Yeah, sure.
Not the Boss. It's TC Electronic.
Okay.
I didn't want to butt in and say anything, but I was like, the Ditto's TC, but us. You got theirs. Yeah. I mean, I come from the olden days of effects. Before there was, it's been really actually very interesting to watch the culture of pedals evolve. I mean, it's especially with social media and the internet, and like you have pedal companies that are content creators now. And like they have, you know, a show on YouTube that's sort of tangentially related to their pedals. And I think it's like there's never been a better time to be into any kind of sound modifying devices. But as much as things evolve, they also stay the same. I mean, the topography of a pedal board is often just, you know, you've got some sort of boost or dirt, you know, overdrive pedal, and you have some sort of modulation, and then maybe another boost, and then you have your time based stuff after that. That's kind of the basic setup that I like to do. Depends on I have different pedal boards for different gigs. I have a pedal board that lives in New York that travels with the Hold Steady. I have a pedal board here in town for gigs. I have another pedal board here in town that is just for church gigs. So that sort of just eliminates a lot of robbing Peter to pay Paul. But I think if I had a favorite pedal, probably a Phaser pedal. Does this make any sense to anybody? Like what we're talking about? Okay.
Guitar pedal.
I mean, again, coming from that sort of funkadelic Wawa Watson kind of thing, it's just like something about the chewiness of Phaser. I tend to lean on it. I think I had my first Phaser when we were in Fester together, the MXR Phase 45.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a really nice Phaser and it got stolen off stage.
Knoxville. Yeah. It was script Lego.
We went back. I came back out. I was like, this pedal's gone. I really wish I still had that pedal.
Yeah.
And Alicia, your setup's you're pretty simple with your setup. Yeah.
I guess and on my first pedal was a Phaser, which I bought used super cheap and all beat up, which was fun, but I stopped using that. I think I was using that more when I bought a recorder, but I just use a Boss tuner and then a full tone full drive, and it has a regular overdrive switch and a boost. And I, if this makes sense, I use my amp. I use a Music Man twin, and I turn the master all the way up so that, and then my gain is down, or whatever, the volume's down very, very low. So I'm not getting the gain off the actual amp. I'm just getting the cleanest sound I can. So my pedal is my sound, full tone, full drive. And then I do have an echo pedal called a two timer, which isn't my ideal ever pedal. I think there's some kind of Boss echo I like better, but I've turned out to really like it. And it has two echo settings, so you can have two speeds at once and to switch back between those.
Well, a segue into the next question is, I'll tell a story from this past weekend. I saw this Nigerian band Etron Del Air. I know Gary was there. I don't know if anyone else saw it, but they played at Growlers, and they came out. They had a backline, and they came out and they had guitar center backline, and they had no pedals. They like came in and just plucked in and just rocked it with no pedals. Sometimes I wish I could do that. So I would ask, like, you know, they're playing a whole different type of technique. Is there a guitar technique, Frankie, that, you know, finger picking or slide that you haven't done a lot of that you wish you could, or shredding?
I would like to be able to sweep.
I just uploaded my first
it's
going to be a while.
Okay, and explain what sweeping is. So the people that don't.
When you listen to a song like that, I want to be able to do that.
You're like a sweeping, fanning motion across.
Okay, I like that. That's a good.
Feel like a good skill there.
Yeah, yeah. Steve, I mean, you're kind of a jack of all trades. Is there?
I'm not much of a jazzer. That's just been a vocabulary that's always sort of eluded me. But what my target these days here, again, he's sort of finding some kind of niche. I'm really interested in not just because, you know, people are like, well, play like yourself. It's like, well, yeah, I do. It is fun. But like sometimes I want to live in someone else's space, you know? So I've been really into Lonnie Johnson, especially his electric stuff. Lonnie Johnson, just legendary, like, blues-ish, jazz-ish guitar player. He had a career in the 20s playing acoustic, and then kind of fell off, and then kind of came back. But, you know, basically mostly solo guitar and voice, but blues, but with a bit of a early jazz tinge to it. And what I'm interested in, and especially with, like, lately, just what I've been into is with like jump blues, like Lowell Fulson or BB King or stuff like that. People think of it as blues, so a guitar player might think of it as like, yeah, well, it's blues, so it's just a pentatonic box, and it's absolutely not that. It's there's elements of the pentatonic, but there's stuff outside of it. There's leading lines. There's sort of playing through changes. And if you try to play straight up like pentatonic blues, you're gonna sound whack. It's gonna be terrible. I know because I've done it. But I'm trying to figure out, you know, one thing that's difficult for me having played guitar so long is just that your fingers just remember what they remember. You know, it's like, oh, I can do this. It's like, well, try to do that. It's like, oh, this is hard. Just from they're not used to landing in that certain way, you know, for me anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I just sort of take on these little projects as a way of sort of enlightening myself, I guess.
Alicia, switching a little bit to kind of songwriting, creating. When it's time to create, or you're writing a song or deciding you want to create something, I mean, how do you approach composing music? What's your approach to that?
I usually start with guitar, and it's got all these different approaches. I mean, I've got all these jizz. Sometimes I'm just play around. I have the recording, everything ready, and I may just have like a feeling of the mood I'm in, and I try to find what chords are appealing. It's weird. I write songs in batches. So if I may feel like I want to do something difficult today that's got lots of parts and is interesting. And then the other days I'll be like, I just want to do a song with like a repetitiveness to it. The guitar is usually my first instrument, but if I have to write songs and I'm stuck, I will switch up between bass and keyboards.
What about you, Frankie? When you're creating, what's that process like for you?
Well, yeah, it's guitar and bass. If I do write with guitar, I tend to start, like, I'll just pick up my guitar, play a few things, like, oh, that's nice. I'll record into the looper and then add on top of that. But then once I bring it into the, like, my recording program, I'll probably still start with the drums, bass, and then kind of convert whatever sounds I made into something else. And then still kind of fill in guitar.
And how does the looper work in that process?
I think it's more just like a groove, to be able to sit in the groove and just have something that I'm like getting to that hypnotic, we are making music, it loops, and then just kind of like that. And sometimes I listen to music while I make music, and that helps a lot. So like the empty space or sound, like sometimes when you hit pause, sometimes I'm making music and then I hit space bar to like stop the music I'm working on, I get either like immediately disengaged with it, or yeah, I just immediately start having opinions. So if I have music going, kind of like combats that, and I'm like, it kind of inspires me while I'm working and stuff like that. So
that's cool. Steve, what, you know, you've been playing a while. What is your specific, you're still practice, and like, what's your, or speak to maybe like when, what your practice routine was or what it, and what it still is.
It never was. I mean, I, it was literally a matter of like, I just had to have the guitar in my hands.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, I would have a goal of learning something. I mean, I remember learning Stairway to Heaven and like throwing my guitar on the bed out of frustration when I finally got there. But I mean, you know, it's just these days, it's like, let me plug in a couple pedals and see if it jars something loose or, you know, any kind of way. But, I mean, the only time I ever really practice is if I have to like learn songs.
Yeah.
You know? But, or, I mean, writing is a practice. So like if I'm writing for the Hold Steady, that's one way of working. Or if I'm writing for myself, it could manifest any sort of way, you know, a weird synth loop or whatever else, you know.
But you're never reaching for your dexterity, really, like, or,
I mean, I like to keep, I mean, I don't want to not play, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it's not to go out there and practice, you know. It's just, I mean, there's a guitar on the couch.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couch and a TV upstairs, you know, so we're going to go watch the Bear, and I'm going to play guitar along to it. You know, I like playing guitar along, like, what I really like doing is like, if there's a like kind of a slower emotional scene, I play some really bad blues licks, you know, and just drives my wife crazy. It's really funny. But I remember we had a gig in Houston, and this is our band, and we played like 2 hours, and then we were hanging out backstage, and there's acoustic guitar, and I just sat in the corner and played that thing until it was time to load out.
And is that similar for you, Alicia? I mean, you're not, are you? You practice guitar, or is it just part of what you're doing when you're creating music?
I definitely have been where, oh, I've got to practice guitar. I have to improve my finger dexterity and stuff like that. But that's because it's low on my priority. I just felt like songwriting, like I'll have a guitar maybe in my lap for 2 hours while I'm, or 1 hour, how, you know, I don't even, you lose track of time when you're writing songs on, if it's 30 minutes or 2 hours. But, you know, I have a guitar in my lap the whole time, but I'm just in the mode of songwriting. And well, I think my technique is mostly improved upon by being a recordist, because I'm layering, and that's when I'm, well, you lose yourself in that process. And that's when, you know, I go back, especially I'll go back and have layered and layered. And then I know what I want to do. And I'm going towards this goal that not so much I hear in my head, but I'm just moving along the channel of layering a song in songwriting. And the only time I really am practicing is if I'm recording a song and I have a solo, I want to do a solo, and live, a lot of times we'll do a solo that's just like, it can just be noise, but maybe it ends with a fixed part, or starts with a fixed part and it goes into noise. But when I'm recording something, I want it really fixed, because then I'm going to go back and do it 3 more times on top of that guitar solo so it pops out in a really loud way. So that's the only time I'm really working on technique of my own songs. But like once every like 3 years, I'll sit down and try to do AC/DC Thunderstruck through for YouTube guy, or the, you know, something like that, and just be like, I'm going to learn this, and I'll not finish, but I'll make a good hour and a half attempt.
Yeah. I mean, recording, I think, is a big part when I play guitar. It's kind of similar. Like, oh, got to do a solo. So you rehearse it, you mess it up, and then you finally get it, and then you double it, and then you triple it. And I like to do the, I mean, I haven't been playing guitar as much, so I have to like get warmed up, and I'm doing the scales up and down that I learned at Howard Vance Guitar Academy on Poplar back in the,
You know, these things, you know, we're not getting any younger, Robbie. It's like, you gotta warm up.
Steve and I used to have this thing where we'd put our hands in ice,
which is before the gig.
Apparently a terrible idea.
Is it a bad idea?
Yeah. You should do it afterwards.
You got me. It's afterwards.
Yes.
Okay, well.
We were fully sold on it though, and it worked.
It was, you know, it's like, go get the ice, make sure it's melted, and do that.
No,
if you take one thing away from this panel,
talk. Oh, yeah.
Alicia, you're a visual artist, and Frankie and Steve both do photography. Steve, how does guitar playing impact your other art that you do? I mean, are they completely separate, or do you see those things? Do they relate to each other?
Pretty separate. You know, it's for me, like the I keep the photography kind of precious, because it's a way to be creative that's completely separated from my so-called career. Like, you know, there's a lot of, I've been doing this professionally for a number of years, and, you know, I've been very fortunate. It's been great. But there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of like expectation and, you know, like promoting yourself and, you know, worrying about blah, blah, blah. And when I go out and shoot, it's just quiet, and I'm not worried about, you know, oh man, how's this going to do? Like, whoa, well, you think Bobby's still into this? You know, it's also just because my house is pretty chaotic. My son has some disabilities that make for interesting times. And so it's just a way to kind of go out and quiet things, you know. The only thing that I've done that's kind of where the two came together was earlier this year, I put out a record called Mem Mods. It was me and Paul Taylor and Luther Dickinson, pandemic recording. So we were needing to do videos, and we had our buddy Jake Vest did a video for one of the songs. We did a video for one of the songs, like with our iPhones. And then we just had this last song. We needed an idea, and it was a total punt. I just made a slideshow of a bunch of my photographs, yeah. Film photographs. And that was the video.
That's the first time at all.
Yeah. But I mean, whatever, but yeah, I, you know, I don't know how much they would combine, but for me, again, it's just on this last Hold Steady record, I was kind of exhausted. Like I wrote a lot, and I just kind of needed to take a break. And it was almost like I think you sort of spoke to that, kind of just, you need to walk away from the intensity of creating music, you know, and always being in, like, you know, trying to keep your antenna up, you know. I needed to kind of shut down and go explore creativity a different way. And I've just now come back, and it's been great, you know. It's kind of, I didn't fall out of love with the guitar, but like I'm back. You know, back to poking around on Reverb for stuff instead of cameras.
And Alicia, for you, it's maybe a little more straightforward. I mean, you do visual art with, you know, you're creating album covers, and it's all kind of intertwined.
Yeah. Well, I was two things. Well, when you were talking, I think when there was the COVID shutdown and we couldn't really do music, that if you were an artist, you went really into your art and your visual world. And then so far deeper than maybe musicians who have art on the side normally go. And then it took a little while to come back. I don't know if I kind of felt that. But I really came in. I started dabbling in guitar and songs and stuff when I was like 14, when I first got a guitar, and always played it. But it was like a thing I would do in my bedroom to occupy my time, like anyone, you know, would do at that age in your life when you have that freedom. And I went to, I studied art in my bachelor's, and then I went back to art to get a master's in art. And when you are a visual art, come on, you're spending hours, I mean like 10 hours or 12 hours at a time in your studio creating, you're listening to music the whole time. And it was like, it's a really good time for me to learn about music and to take in music and to feel music. And it's like, it became part of me and what I like. So that being said, as I painted more, and I haven't done one for a while, but I started making all these time-lapse videos of my painting, and then I'd boil them down to like the length of, at the time I started, like Instagram only allowed you 30 seconds of your music. So I'd just do the painting in 30 seconds to a little clip of a song of mine as sort of like, here's what I've been working on in music and painting at the same time.
Show it all. That's cool.
You were putting up a lot of stuff there it was cool. I liked it a lot. I mean, it was like kind of like, you know, posts like right after lockdown and stuff. It was good content.
Steve, you collaborate a lot. I mean, we've collaborated.
Yeah.
You know, you join Hold Steady. How do you approach that when you're, like, for example, with the Hold Steady, when you guys are writing music?
how do y'all collaborate together?
Well, it's sort of changed. I mean, we've done it a lot of different ways. We've like kind of all gotten in a room together and kind of like with a germ of an idea and kind of pushed that around. But at that sort of time, because I mean, when everybody doesn't live in the same space. So now what we do is me and the other guitar player, Tad, and the keyboard player, Franz, when we start gearing up for a record, we make demos at home because we all record at home, and we just throw those demos in a Dropbox folder, and then whatever our singer flashes on can kind of find a way in. He sort of picks those and puts lyrics and melodies to it. So the last couple of records have been that. So, you know, I'm always, I don't know if everyone does this, but, you know, I'll be playing guitar at home or whatever, something will flash on something, and so I'll put up the iPhone and make a video of it so I can, one, remember it, the sound, but also remember how to play it, you know, because I'll be like, I don't know what I did. And so, you know, those turn into germs that I work on. You know, it might be anywhere from a voice memo like that, or like I'll fully track it and play drums, which takes forever because I'm a terrible drummer. And just, you know, so that's kind of the, you know, way we do that. But then, you know, with other people, you know, just getting in a room and just, I mean, the main thing is just keeping your ears as open as possible and your sort of heart open, you know, and just sort of let things happen and don't be too rigid about things.
Yeah. Steve and I played like from 91 on, you know, when we played together, I was the rhythm guitar player, and I've involved in other areas to kind of play lead, but you were incredible lead, you know, guitar player in 91. So when we were playing together, I would kind of lay back a little bit in rhythm and you were playing lead, but now you play with Tad, who's, I mean, he's a lead guitar player too. How do y'all in a live setting like decide who's gonna shred and who's not?
It's, I mean, some tunes are just like, yeah, I mean, you know, these are tunes that were there before I was in the band, you know, and it's just like a couple of tunes I'll play the solo, and then like in terms of new stuff, it just kind of, I don't know how it happens really, but it just sort of, you know, either I do it or he does it. It just, there doesn't seem to be a lot of conversation about it, but you know, you must have been so bored when I was like in the like bar 32 of Red Hot Mama.
No, you're
something.
Favorite guitar player.
I have a clear memory though. So this, we were working on I had a song that later became this tune, Little Tico. And I don't know if you remember this, we were in the back house, and I kind of had this verse, and I had this beat up old Fender Rhodes, and you're like, I don't know, man. And you just went boop, doop, boop, 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 doop, boop. Like you just kind of pecked out the melody. And I was like, okay. And then like the words came to me like immediately. So that was a real example of creation in the moment, right?
That's cool. Pull it out of the ether. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm forever, every time I play that song, I always tick off a little debt to Robbie Grant.
And Alicia, what about you? I mean, Alicia and I, we're also in a band called Mouse Rocket together that has played over the years. Hadn't played in a year and a half. And you play with other guitar players some, but I mean, how do you approach collaboration? Like when you want to play with another guitar player or not? How do you determine that?
So a band I used to play with called Lost Sounds, I still am friends with a guy who was in that band who was the drummer, even though he'll always say, I'm not really a drummer. But anyway, he's a great drummer for me songwriting with when I'm on guitar. So that's probably the one person, Rich, who I can write songs with in a room. Somehow it's like got to be a person who you're in a similar wavelength and they stimulate your writing. They stimulate your energy for writing, I guess. And then more recently, well, I'm lost track of time, but sometime in 22 and 23, I started Greg Cartwright, who lives a lot more in Memphis now, started getting together with other people to do songwriting. And we actually did pretty well together writing songs. And mainly it was like one person would have an idea, but it could either start with the concept or already a set of chords or whatever. And then we would be, I'm jumping into songwriting, so I'm getting off it, but we would spend a lot of time really on the lyrics and the structure and then pulling things in and out as we go. So that worked pretty well. I normally do it by myself.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask one more question and then we'll do some Q&A if anyone has some stuff to ask. Frankie, What advice would you give to a beginner guitar player who wants to follow in your footsteps?
In my actual footsteps?
Yeah. Or, yes. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, I say for one, ask me questions because I will answer them most likely, or tell you where to get the answer. If you want proof that it'll get you where you need to go, it's getting me there. So, yeah, get online and ask me questions.
Yeah, that's cool. Steve, what advice would you give to a budding young guitar player that wants to be the next Steve Selvidge?
Oh God. Well, so I've had, you know, every now and again here and there, say I can playing here in town, like, you know, say like when I was playing with Ross Rice, the Blue Monkey, and there was occasions for, you know, some pretty long guitar solos, you know, like just big show offy, whatever, improvise guitar solos, which is kind of one of the things that I do, you know, and somebody would come up and clearly like, they're like, do you give lessons? And like, what they're saying is like, I want to do what you just did. And I don't mean to be like glib about it, but I'm just like, my advice to you is to write songs, because you're going to be just a lot better off with songs rather than just being a guitar for hire. You know, there's just more ink in that well. But I mean, it's fun to do all this too. But I remember I asked Jim Duckworth, I did the same thing to Jim Duckworth. I was just like, man, can you give me lessons? And he was like, man, why don't you just come over and listen to records or something? You know, like, just because like, you're not going to, I wasn't going to be Jim Duckworth. I'm still not Jim Duckworth.
So listen.
Yeah. So just, you know, listen, and I don't know, listen to Funkadelic. I think too, in these days, especially just what y'all have been talking about a lot, is just the now that you can record at home so easily, recording is a writing instrument, you know, the your Pro Tools, whatever rig you're using, is just another tool as a guitar or a keyboard. Like a lot of times, like when I'm writing, I might not have a bridge and I'd leave however many bars open and I just hit the red light. I'm like, I got to come up with something, like it's that blank spot's coming up. And I've gotten some pretty good bridges out of that, you know, just out of sort of like giving myself the challenge. But just using your recording as a means to write is really fruitful.
Yeah, that's cool. Let's give our panelists a big round of applause. Thanks for coming out. I'm going to come around.
Phil Donahue.
Hello. Montel. That's what I...
I'm curious, you know, obviously Mosh has done a great job with a local exhibit of Memphis guitarists. And so I just had a question about all of your time being, you know, from Memphis and being around Memphis guitarists, Memphis musicians, you know, how this local scene really shaped your guitar playing. And I know that's kind of a question for everyone, but I think it's an important question.
I'll start. I mean, having the good fortune to be sort of around people who were older than me that led to being around people that are a little bit younger than those people that are still older than me. A lot of people sort of took me under their wing, like session wise, like, you know, Dave Smith, bass player, Steve Potts, drummer, and doing sessions, and then and having the wherewithal to know who these people were. Like my dad was good friends with Teenie Hodges. Teenie Hodges wrote and played guitar on like all the classic Al Green tunes, if you didn't know. And through working with a guy, John Kilzer, who was friends with Teenie, I got to work with him and literally sit knee to knee doing overdubs, stuff like that. And like just the little things that I would pick up, and playing with his brother, is Charlton Flick Hodges. Like, these people are still here, you know, and like this, it's, I mean, they wrote and played and performed some of the most world-class music that has, that's timeless, you know, and being able to just be in their space was huge for me, and just pick up little things. And then you have your contemporaries. I mean, growing up, playing guitar with Luther Dickinson, I mean, we were, you know, we knew each other since we were little kids, and we still talk about guitar to this day. And then like, Grayson's brother had a band, and Joe Restivo was the guitar player in that band. And he is, I remember seeing Joe Restivo for the first time. He was 16 years old, and he was just dangerous. He was so good. He was so good then, and he's even better now, you know. And then everybody that's coming up, you know, it's like just keeping an open ear, you know, and to see what's going on.
And then, you know, Memphis is a metropolitan area, but it's not so big. I mean, you can have these moments that Steve's talking about. I mean, if you're in New York or L.A., you could get lost there. You know, people don't have time for you. I mean, you know, so there's that, it creates that fertile ground, I think. So I think that region does make a big difference. Cool. Any questions?
I'm seeing my life flash before my very eyes. I mean, isn't it? It is quite profound how the relationship with the guitar, it's just never, it's the one thing that will never go away. It'll never break your heart or divorce you. I've been in California for over 25 years and working professionally for a lot of guitar players. And the irony is sitting here, I too got my first effect pedal from Steve Selvidge.
That's
right. And I was in a demo session with Eric Lewis about 3 weeks ago, and he's like, gee, Jad, I didn't know you played guitar. And I said, well, when I was here, I couldn't play for shit, you know, and things change, you know, when you continue to do something continuously, it can become your best friend. But the guitar, for some of these people I've worked for, I'll just say a few things that stand out. You know, Brian Ray of Paul McCartney's band, we'd come into the salon, and so we'd have conversation, and he'd be like, Jad, it's not important for you to play lead, solos, lead guitar. I said, yeah, but I want to play like Denny Lane and, you know, James McMurtry, man. I mean, you got to be able to play the rock orchestra lead and, you know, spot on to consider yourself a, you know, a rock and roll guitar player. And so you play long enough, you get a distinction. Knowing you guys in the way that I do and hearing the dynamic of your great music over the years, decades now, you know, Steve's every bit of Nine's Right and Chic, you know, and Alicia's every bit of Ace Frehley, you know. And so when we're younger, these are the kind of players that, like, you know, they boil our blood. They get us elated. You know, in 1976, when you're 6 years old and you see Ace Frehley, you know, you don't hear many people to play with that candor, the dynamic, the, like she said, the, you know, the instrument and the amps and stuff like that. And she does it all too very well, you know, more so than many people. But I just was, it's cool because I didn't even know this that I've been gone. You know,
yeah, cool. Any other comments or questions?
Mm-hmm.
This
is for everyone.
Nice. I'm here.
Oh, here.
Yep. Hey, guys, doing? Sorry, you doing? I appreciate y'all's time. Appreciate your time. So I am an avid music lover. I'm not a guitarist, although I was gifted an electric guitar, so I'm hoping to be on y'all's level, you know, sometime eventually. But kind of a different-ish question, but where in Memphis are some good places to go to hear some good guitarists?
Guitar.
To hear guitarists?
Mm-hmm. Or guitars in general. I mean, I enjoy hearing guitars, but yeah.
I mean,
that's the irony in today's society.
Across the nation, there are very few places. I mean, DKDC, Cooper Young, there's often bands playing there that, you know, and it's usually pretty much based with guitar, bass, drums kind of vibe. It's not exact. I mean, I try to avoid Beale Street for various reasons, but if you go to Beale Street, certain places, there are people playing. That's their regular gig, and there's like some of the best guitar players you'll hear still doing it. You know, they might be playing top 40 kind of stuff. Depends, which is, you know, no pejorative to that, but
I mean, Joe Restivo does like a brunch.
Yeah,
and he's an incredible jazz guitar player. Were you gonna say something pranky?
Yeah, I was just gonna say it might be easier to maybe name some bands because like the places kind of vary.
Yeah,
so I would be like Growlers with like you might go and they might not, you know. So
might be DJ night.
Yeah.
So just keep an ear out for bands. I mean, Taliba then goes with plays with Frankie and
get Black Alicia. Cream.
Black Cream. That's T.O. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's killer. He's killer. And just, you know, just go stand in front of the guitar player.
Cool. You know, I guess it's talk about being a lot of bands. I guess it's the Sheiks and the Tennessee Screamers, but Keith Cooper is kind of one of my favorite guitar players in town right now.
Yeah.
He's so cool. But you just have to have, you have to keep an encyclopedic knowledge of who all these bands are and how different, like, because again, it's just so many people have so many bands.
Mm-hmm. Cool. One more, anybody? One more question? We'll do Billy, and then we'll thank everybody for, now I really feel like Phil Donahue.
You just name your favorite guitar and then a guitar that you don't own, but you lust after and must have.
So favorite, Billy's asking favorite guitar or that you own or guitar, a favorite guitar that you lust over. For me, it was during the pandemic. I mean, I play a Tele and I play a Gibson 335, and during the pandemic, I called Steve. I'm like, I think I want to build a guitar. And Billy builds guitars. He just asked a question. So I think I want to build one. And so Steve and I were talking about it. I'm like, I'm going to take so much time. I'm going to build this thing. He's like, what kind of body do you want? So I was like, maybe like a Jazzmaster body. And Steve's like, just buy a Jazzmaster. So I bought it and I love it. So it's I haven't bought a guitar in years.
I've done a lot of parts casters over the years, and it's like it can be kind of heartbreaking. And also, they had just come out with the Squire J. Maskus Jazzmasters, which are cheap, like $300, and it's a great guitar. I mean, a fantastic guitar.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could pin it down to one thing. I mean, I have a lot of guitars, but I've been playing here again a parts caster Tele that I built. I've got two of them, and I've been playing this Fiesta Red Tele a lot. I've been kind of in a Telecaster world, which is like, you can play guitar and then you can play Telecaster. It's like, it's a whole thing. Something that I lust after, I mean, whatever, like a for real custom color, you know, Strat, even though Strats are a little, or can be complicated. I don't know. I think Strats are cool again now, right? People love chorus pedals. I don't know.
You lust after Kramers.
You know what? Sometimes I do think about, like, because if you're of a certain age, the south-facing wall at Strings and Things at one point was all Kramers. And I was just like, oh, I want one. But on a very niche level, what I'm kind of obsessed with right now is the very first Floyd Rose tremolos and vibratos that don't have the fine tuners. But anyway, that's my niche. Y'all don't want to hear about.
Well, cool. Well, Steve, Frankie, Alicia, thank you so much for joining us today. Let's give them a round of applause.
Thank you.
And thank you, Portia. Thanks for having me.
Always. Pleasure. Just to let you guys know, every second Saturday of the month, we do The Way They Play here in the museum as you way into the exhibit. So we encourage you guys to come back and check out the exhibit, and also check out other guitarists around town that come and share their story with us. So it has truly been a pleasure. Thank you guys so much for sharing with us. All right, you guys be safe.
It's 1928 and it must be a brand. And it's mine, y'all, take me to your back door. And I'll take me to your back door. As the time get rough, I ain't gonna make the trip. Down, don't stay around down till dawn. well, it's time for you and me.